What's going on, everybody? Welcome back for another episode of Trigger. This is Triggered, episode number 516 here on Wednesday, May 22nd. Welcome to the one and only managing editor of townhall.com, Spencer Brown. Matt is on vacation, so he... Yeah, he's just being lazy out on the West Coast like a fucking liberal. Hopefully doesn't die in any Portland riots that may occur. But here we are to talk about the news, and guess what? The piece of shit president of Iran is dead, burned in hell, along with the Iranian foreign minister.
Do we have, like, celebratory music we could toss in there?
Well, when Nikki Haley died in the presidential race, I played Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. But I don't know, was he a witch? He was more like a devil.
He was the butcher.
Yeah, the butcher, yeah.
So.
But, you know, according to the Biden administration,
yeah.
I don't know, what did they call him in that? He was just, like, the beloved leader of Iran or some shit like that.
Apparently it's normal to mourn the deaths of genocidal maniacs.
Oh, well, yeah, did you
who
see...
Who also, he was running the government that all they do there is chant death to America.
Yeah. So, did you see they lowered the UN flag? I don't remember them doing that after the 10-7 attack.
No.
It's just, I don't understand. They honored him on the floor of Congress. The chaplain.
Was like,
let's pray for Iran and losing their leader.
Yeah.
Like, fuck them.
It's the best thing that could have happened to the people of Iran.
Yeah, you think any of our enemies are going to ever be saying anything like that about us? No.
No, our enemies have only been praising the idiots protesting on college campuses for Hamas.
Yeah.
That's the only Americans they like. But they only like them for now, and if they had the chance, they would kill them all brutally.
Right, right. So yeah, that guy and his terrorist buddies can all burn in hell.
It was...
he should have invested in a better-than-Soviet-era helicopter.
Yeah.
Clearly also did not learn the lesson from Kobe.
Oh.
I mean, that's basically exactly what he did. Flew into a foggy mountain.
Well, and it was in a way, first of all, apparently the hot take that it's a good thing that a terrorist leader is dead. I guess, like, we're the only podcast probably in D.C. celebrating this news.
Mm-hmm.
But it was somewhat reassuring. Like, there's a lot of reasons to be scared because of how bad Joe Biden is at leading the United States, both at home and especially abroad. And you've got this axis of all these evil countries, Russia, Iran, China, North Korea, you know, all those bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to see, though, that, like, the Iranians are not necessarily firing on all cylinders. If they have really old helicopters that even their president flies around on, mm-hmm. like, imagine the current state of their military.
Well, how wild was it that it took them that long to find
them? Well, apparently they don't have transponders in Iran.
Yeah.
Or radar that was tracking where the helicopter was, or a GPS beacon they could ping, or literally anything.
Any of that, yeah.
And they were like, well, it was a premature hard landing. And I was like, that feels like a bit of a euphemism for a crash, because technically that's the same thing as a crash, I suppose. And then they were like, yeah, nobody can get to them. And then for a while, some of the people who were searching for the helicopter, they also were, like, lost contact with them. So it was like the Bermuda Triangle of whatever mountainside this is in northern Iran.
Yep.
But yeah, it was entertaining how long it took them to find them. And then, of course, you have the State Department and President Biden and everybody being like, oh, we must, you know, issue these official condolence statements. And I'm like, no, you don't.
No.
I covered one of theirs this week, and as I pointed out, Bill Clinton in 1998, when Pol Pot died, issued what I consider to be a tremendous statement, because he went into all of the atrocities Pol Pot committed and talked more about the people and the victims of Pol Pot than they did, you know, the Biden administration just basically said, we're sorry your president died, and didn't mention the fact that he was known as the Butcher of Tehran, that he was responsible for the deaths of thousands of innocent people in his country. He sentenced most of them to death after a less than 5 minutes, quote-unquote, trial.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff that they could have pointed out in there as a way to hit Iran. But of course, as the Biden administration has demonstrated, Iran is basically being treated as an ally compared to Israel at this point, because not only has the Biden administration relaxed all the maximum pressure sanctions that the Trump administration put on the Iranians, so much so that Iran now is estimated to have made, just from illicit oil sales alone, $40 billion more, thanks to Biden, than if maximum pressure had stayed in place. So you've got all that money that Iran is using to sponsor terrorism around the world, including attacks that killed a U.S. soldier in that attack on the military base in northern Jordan.
Yep.
So you've got all that money going in. Then the Biden administration unfroze a couple $100 billion for the Iranians, which everybody says in the Biden administration, well, they couldn't use that for terrorism because they apparently somehow don't understand that money is fungible. never had to use the word fungible more in my life than I did since that happened. And so, like, the Biden administration trying to act like they're tough on Iran is just absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
Hardest hit in all of this, Ben Rhodes and the Obama podcast bros.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranians were their best friends.
Oh, he was crying. Oh, what's the other guy's name? Tommy Vitor.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's a real piece of shit. Yeah, so anyway, great news.
That's maybe
there.
The only good news, is there's one
that is pretty much the only good news.
Terrorist dictator in the world.
Yep. I'm sure they'll find a real winner to replace him, but...
Oh, yeah.
The one of the conspiracy theories was that the Ayatollah's son wanted to get rid of him. That way, there's no impediment to his path to ultimate, what is it, Ayatollah-ing, whatever you want to call it.
Like, the supreme leader.
Yes, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Israel-Hamas war going on over there. You know, we've had all these weapons shipments being held up, which Jake Sullivan says is not actually withholding, even though that is the definition of withholding.
Yep.
You're holding it with you.
You're holding it with
so,
you instead of them, yes.
Yeah, we've had some, like, limited operations in Rafah. That's still, like, the big thing. Are they going to just, you know, finish the job here? Are they not going to finish the job? We've gotten some recovery of some murdered hostages recently, four of them, right, I think?
Yes.
Which, you know, I've long said they've got to be 90% dead at this point. There's a reason that they won't be able to trade them in any of these deals because they're not alive.
Yeah, Hamas admitted that in the last ceasefire proposal that Israel put forward that Hamas rejected. One of the problems cited by Hamas was that they were unable to locate enough hostages to hand over, which means most of them have been murdered.
Yeah, they're like, how about we just give you the bodies of the hostages?
Not going to work.
Like, yeah, okay.
That's not enough to stop fighting. And in addition to finding the bodies of the four hostages that they've been going through, and like the Rafah operation actually has been going very well in general, but they uncovered
the tunnels,
tons of tunnels, which everyone, like, obviously since Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip, you know, whatever that is, like 15 years ago, it's been harder for the IDF and Israel to keep tabs on exactly what was going on there, but it was still generally assumed that there was a tunnel network running under Gaza's southern border going into Egypt, where weapons and terrorist supplies and terrorists themselves were being smuggled in and out of the Gaza Strip.
Yep.
And then once Israel got into Rafah, they found all the tunnels, hundreds of shafts, and I think it was 75 or something.
Yep.
Tunnels, and it's basically just... like, some of the pictures that you see of the terror tunnels elsewhere in Gaza don't do these justice, and they haven't released a ton of photos yet, but imagine, like in the United States, if you're on an interstate and you go in a tunnel through a mountain, that's what these tunnels are like.
Yep.
Like, it's a highway system that allows trucks full of weapons and terrorists and other things to go in and out, which is an embarrassing situation for Egypt to now have to explain why they weren't actually, like, they built those huge fences and a beautiful, pretty significant border wall on the above ground portion of the Israel-Gaza border, but they were willfully, at least with the knowledge of it, allowing this to continue the smuggling underground. So they have a lot of explaining to do. Not that the Biden administration will hold them accountable for it, but it is troubling that a country would kind of pretend that they were against basically only Palestinians, but fine with Hamas moving stuff back and forth across the border.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing. And so Bill Maher has been on a pretty decent-sized tear recently of telling truth to liberals, which is going interestingly. He was on The View and a whole bunch of other places. But when he was on The View yesterday, he said, you know what? When Israel left and the international community gave the Palestinians hundreds of millions of dollars, essentially, maybe totaling up to billions. You know what they did? They didn't turn it into a nice place to live.
No.
They spent it on building rockets, missiles, buying guns, ammo, and militarizing their terrorist wing of Gaza.
Yep.
And building all these tunnels.
Yep.
And so they chose this, and they chose to attack on 10/7, and Israel is defending itself, and doing what needs to be done. And all of them were just like, but what about the women and children? And he's like, it's a war.
Yep.
It's a war. Like, that's, they brought this on themselves.
And the number of women and children killed that everybody was citing to claim that Israel was committing a genocide turned out to be double what the actual case was.
Mm-hmm.
And so Israel now at this point is running on a combatant to civilian casualty ratio of 1 to 1.14, which is a better ratio than we had in Mosul and certainly had in any previous war, whether it was World War II, World War I, any of that, but still better than we had in Mosul, and people weren't accusing the United States of a genocide then. But yeah, it's garbage. And the craziest thing too is even the countries that tried to, they were, you know, wanting to support the quote unquote Palestinians and whatever, when they would, instead of just giving them, you know, money or something that they could have traded, sort of bartered for weapons with other countries in the region or other Iran-backed terrorists, the people that gave them stuff like sewer pipes to help improve their drinking water system and try to cut down on communicable diseases and get human waste out of the way and things like that. Hamas just took that stuff too and used the sewer pipes to make rockets and used there. If you go to the Gaza Strip, there are no like street signs or light poles on the corner because all of those were also turned into rockets.
Mm.
So there's this whole idea that if we just give them some more money and some more aid, they'll, you know, turn the corner is just not a thing. And Hamas has said if they survive this, they want to do October 7th over and over and over again. So obviously they can't be allowed to survive.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, you believe them when they say they want to exterminate the Jewish people. Like, that's, they say it.
Mm-hmm.
And all these terrorists on college campuses and here in America generally are supporting them in that mission. Yeah. And it's, I don't know. Would you have ever thought back in the like the post 9/11 days you'd see people openly supporting terrorist groups here in the United States? It's like, Dick Cheney wouldn't allow that shit. Say what you will about Dick Cheney, but he wouldn't have fucking allowed that.
that's probably true.
Yeah. And so then they put out this ICC warrant, the International Criminal Court, which is just an illegitimate body to begin with.
Which even got Biden to condemn.
Yeah.
Which is saying something.
Because,
again, Biden's been helping the Iranians and penalizing Israel. But when they did this, and to be clear, this is not Joe Biden being a good person. This is Joe Biden being very nervous that the precedent set by the ICC issuing arrest warrants for Israel means that the United States is next. Mm-hmm. And so it's not anything to do with his support for Israel. It's him trying to make sure that this doesn't turn into the ICC coming after the United States. Because I've covered this a bunch already, but ICC's founding charter, the Rome Statute, is based on this principle of complementarity. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's too many syllables. It's like complementary, but with an extra complementarity. Yeah, I think that's it. But anyway, this whole idea is that if a country has a robust justice system that's independent and can adjudicate, you know, war crimes or bad acts or whatever, then the ICC cannot bring charges or issue arrest warrants until after the country has either refused to adjudicate it or hasn't. And obviously Israel has already shown that it's holding its soldiers and military leaders accountable for things such as the mistaken identity that took out the World Central Kitchen workers in Gaza, things like that. So there's, based on the ICC's own founding treaty, they are unable to do this, and yet they did it anyway. So they're just delegitimizing themselves and making it so that way any other country that's actually doing bad things and doesn't have a robust justice system, like say the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority, mm-hmm. Hamas, any of these groups that don't have a real justice system, they can, like, they're making it so that way they can't hold those actual evil people accountable either. And it's just a massive self-own, basically, just neutering themselves because they're so blinded by their own anti-Semitism and anti-Israel hatred.
Classic.
Also, when has the ICC ever, like, issued arrest warrants for, like, actual criminals, you know?
What's his name from Syria?
Yeah, Assad. Of these people? Like, what are they doing?
Iran sits on, like, the Human Rights Council, don't they, in the UN?
Either that or women's rights, some garbage. Yeah.
So, and we pay for all this.
Yep. Some lawmakers, Republicans, I think it was in the House, have started work on legislation to defund the ICC, which would be great.
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll actually go anywhere, but I hope it does.
We
should also sanction anybody that does fund them.
Yeah.
Let's just completely gut them. Force every other country to cut off ties with them, too.
In a very interesting twist, super unexpected, the Gaza pier is turning out to be a total disaster and failure.
Who could have seen this coming?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. Other than Joe Biden.
Right, yeah.
It's fine. You know, you're going to spend a couple hundred million taxpayer dollars to build essentially a bunch of barges lashed together off the Mediterranean coast of Gaza towards the northern part of Gaza. Mm-hmm. And into a country, of course, where there's a war going on, where the combatants have also sworn death to America. You're going to put U.S. soldiers on that floating pile of barges. Not on, no boots on the ground, but boats on the dock touching the ground.
Yep.
So I'm not really sure how that works. And then tell the world that Israel's in charge of security for it, so that way you can blame Israel if you have another Abbeygate situation where U.S. soldiers end up getting killed, because why would Hamas fear Joe Biden? Obviously they don't.
Classic.
Yeah, and so they finished it, I think, about 4 or 5 days ago now. Yep. And since then, there have been a couple hundred metric tons of humanitarian aid, far less than Biden said would start moving off the pier as soon as it was opened. But of all of that, exactly none of it, according to the Pentagon yesterday, has made it to the people of Gaza.
Correct.
So,
yep.
Well done.
And there's also a video of Hamas stealing it and running over Palestinians as they drove the massive truck away.
Yes, that's
a good one, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's almost like the terrorists are bad people who don't care about the safety of people in Gaza.
Who would have thought then? I mean, that's crazy.
It was kind of, I had a hint the first time they started launching rockets from a children's playground, but now I'm a little more convinced.
Yep.
Or they were running their command and control from a hospital.
Ah, that was too,
that was an indication that maybe they were bad people.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the Associated Press running propaganda and cover for them. Yeah.
We were either first or second, but Town Hall was either the first or the second to call BS on the Shifa Hospital attack that was blamed on the Israeli Air Force bombing a hospital. Yep. And it didn't, not only was a hospital not bombed, but it was a Palestinian Islamic Jihad, which is one of Hamas's neighboring terror buddy groups in Gaza, that misfired their rocket and it hit the parking lot outside the hospital.
Yep.
Which Hamas terrorists admitted to once they were captured and being questioned by the IDF. So, you know.
Yeah, basically how it goes.
Don't take the bait.
Yeah.
Maybe just don't be an anti-Semitic lunatic and look at what you think is actually happening and then write your story.
That's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
It's
not much, but it's honest work.
I hope BB just finishes the job. I've been saying that for years now.
Yeah.
Finally has the opportunity, and he just has to grab it and do it. I think that politically he might be gone no matter what. So he doesn't really have much to lose at this point.
No. No. I think domestic politics in Israel were a mess before October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And October 7th, obviously, kind of much like the United States after 9/11, we cared a lot less about what party you were in and what else was going on, because we were essentially at that point dealing with an existential threat to, you know, not necessarily the whole country, but significant parts of the country were like, is this going to happen again tomorrow and everything else? And so a lot of the domestic stuff that was sort of dragging Netanyahu down before October 7th went by the wayside. But then you take those pre-existing divisions that were already there, and then you tack on the fact that October 7th was not predicted and was certainly not prevented. And that's another thing that's going to be the subject of a lot of investigations and panels and inquiries and everything else. And whatever comes of that, you know, somebody ultimately is, like, there are many people ultimately responsible for that, but somebody will end up having to fall on their sword for not predicting or preventing October 7th. So I think the best outcome probably for Netanyahu with all that going on is that he does destroy Hamas and figures out, you know, what to do with Gaza. I think that, honestly, the what to do with Gaza might be another sinking point for him, because Israel doesn't want to have to deal with that.
Correct.
Egypt has declined to do anything with that. Qatar has declined to do anything with that. Jordan won't touch it with a 10-foot pole, even though Jordan's the queen, Queen Rania, won't shut up about how poor Palestinians, whatever.
Yeah.
But they won't actually help. They'll just talk about it because it lets them attack Israel. So there's so much that goes into that I don't know if he'll survive politically. So I think you're right. He has nothing to lose. He should just finish them off.
Right, and I mean, it certainly was a massive intelligence failure. I don't know how that happened, and they got to figure that out, similar to how we did after 9/11.
Well, right, I mean, that's the same thing. It's like should have been able to put all the pieces together.
Right.
But nobody did.
Yep. Failure and of imagination. I use that line all the time. It's like...
I've heard former IDF people say that same thing about October 7th, and it was they just...
They dismissed it as that it couldn't happen.
They thought things were going well.
Yeah.
Generally, there were still... Obviously, Hamas was firing rockets every now and then. They did it in 2021. They would do it a couple random times, you know, a month from the Gaza Strip. But they did not... Like, the general consensus was that the greatest threat to Israel before October 7th was an invasion by Hezbollah from the north.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was where so much of the focus was. When I was there in August of last year, we went through some of the terror tunnels they had discovered that Hezbollah had been digging under the border to try to do a surprise attack and things like that. So it was just, they did not think it was going to come from the Gaza Strip. And in terms of failure of imagination, they had even expanded the number of like daily work permits that they were giving to Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank who were allowed to go into Israel to work jobs. And there's a lot of agriculture in southern Israel and things like that, that they had been working in like vineyards and fields, whatever. And it turns out that those people who were granted the work permits by the Israeli government were in there doing surveillance. And that's how on October 7th, when Hamas came across the border, they knew exactly where in each kibbutz the security office was, where there were cameras, where they kept the guns, who lived in which houses, who was where IDF soldiers lived in the different villages and stuff. And so they just, if they had any idea that this could happen, they would have done so many things differently, and they didn't. And so somebody has to answer for that. But ultimately, I mean, look, after 9/11, like Bush won re-election, we didn't have... You know, the president didn't have to resign because of it.
Right, right.
And Bill Clinton never really faced significant... I mean, he wasn't president anymore, but it, like, all the buildup to that happened, obviously, while he was in office, and there was never really real consequences for him as far as his political reputation.
Well, you know, he let Bin Laden live.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy in itself, but...
There are a lot of interesting parallels, because Israel saved Yahya Sinwar's life before he returned and started doing all the Hamas leadership. So, I don't know. A lot of weird parallels there. The lesson of the story is kill more terrorists when you have the chance, I think, is the takeaway.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Always. Let's go to a different war here.
Too many wars.
Ukraine.
Yeah.
Well, they're all Joe Biden's fault, really, but...
They are all Joe Biden's fault. That is empirically correct.
What do we make of Zelensky's term? Should have ended Monday, but...
You know, say you mean the term that never ends?
Yeah, no elections. Dictator.
I could have used one of your coughs there.
Yeah, should have saved that one. You know, I get the argument for suspending elections during a war, but like, their main talking point is that we have to defend this incredible democracy in Ukraine from terrible Russia. It's like, okay, but like, you know, the meme, the guy look at it.
Would you look
also,
at it?
Also, Ukraine wasn't some great democracy before this.
It's a little corrupt, as Joe Biden himself admitted in the speech.
Yeah, well, he would know. I mean,
well, yeah.
You know, Burisma, it's crazy to me that they use that talking point, but...
It is annoying that they lump... They basically put Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan all in the same bucket. Mm-hmm. And it's like, those are not all the same kind of democracies.
Yep.
Not even close, actually, but... Yeah, no, so he's... Is there any, like, I mean, I get you, once you declare martial law, it's kind of there till you undeclare it. So, like, is there any actual, like, is there a constitutional time limit on how long you can be under martial law before it's like, okay.
Well, I think the parliament extended it indefinitely.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, he's just, you know, president for life or whatever.
Democracy in action, I guess.
That is, yeah. I don't want to get bogged down in the Ukraine talk because everybody knows how I feel about that. So, why don't we just go with Germany.
Oh.
A great EU democracy, just voted to the Bundestag, voted to decriminalize the possession of child pornography.
Yeah.
How progressive of them.
That's,
Yeah. First, they try to kill all the Jews, and now they're just going for the kids. It's...
I mean, the fact that you can, like, I think the minimum for it is, like, 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Is the minimum sentence for that? That's not gonna deter anyone.
No, yeah, yeah. It's just absolutely disgusting. Like, why do you feel the need to do that?
Somewhere Jeffrey Epstein is rolling in his grave saying, why couldn't you have done this earlier, and he could have just moved to Germany and been probably fine.
Yeah, like, what's the guy's name? Roman Polanski?
Oh, yeah.
I think he moved to France, if I remember.
Yeah, I think so.
But either way, Europe's all fucked up.
I don't know what... I don't, like, of all the things Like, I have enough of an issue with, like, the dumb states in the U.S. run by Democrats that have decriminalized, you know, LSD and all mm-hmm. the, like,
crazy... We were just talking about Denver and shrooms.
Yeah. So, like, I think that's a bad idea, and, like, most of the states that have done it have now tried to recriminalize drugs and stuff like that, because presumably and predictably it doesn't go super well for them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just jumping the shark so far to move the Overton window to, like, you know what, actually we shouldn't be criminalizing child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
Like... So what is, like, if that's not a serious crime, then, like, there really aren't any serious crimes, in my opinion.
I think we should be over-criminalizing it. The child porn people should be summarily executed.
Yeah.
It's...
An actual deterrent, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Europe, geographically, not politically, because the UK is no longer part of EU.
Thank God.
The UK, the Prime Minister today, Rishi Sunak, who generally stinks, called a snap election.
Bold with, move, Cotton.
With his Conservative Party down significantly in the polls. It's definitely a bold move. We'll see how it plays out.
I mean, he could be thinking that, like, you know, a, like, back against the wall sort of situation will...
Rally?
Yeah, but that's... I don't think you can bank on that.
Yeah.
Also, has... Britain not had enough elections in the last couple of years?
I know.
Like, between them and Israel, like, they had mm-hmm. so many... Like, talk about democracy in action. Like, those people have had to vote, like, 20 times in the last decade.
Could you imagine if we had elections like Israel has elections?
No.
Back to back to back like that until you get a, you know, a definitive result?
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. It's enough every 4 years when we do it here with, you know, the midterms mixed in.
That's too much.
But the 4-year presidential cycle, like, even that's by the time you get settled in,
it's a year over.
And then you got to start running for re-election.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, running again.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to work out. I think they may have miscalculated on that.
Yeah. Speaking of our election, it's been a pretty interesting week since the last episode. I think in the last episode we talked about the debate craziness that occurred in like 24-hour period.
Yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I've agreed to a debate, so have I. Oh, this other debate, and we're going to do this.
Yeah. The first debate coming on June 27th, I think there's a lot of rumblings right now about, like, okay, is this actually going to happen? Is it not going to happen? I think the odds-on favorite is it's a yes, it's going to happen, because – Biden made such a big show of it.
Yeah, he can't back out now. He didn't, like, begrudgingly agree. Like, granted, Trump had been asking for this for a lot longer, and then Joe Biden all of a sudden pops up and is like, I challenge mm-hmm. you to a debate. And it's like, bro, he challenged you, like, 12 times in the last year, and you wouldn't say anything. So it would be pretty rough mm-hmm. for him to back out now. I just, my favorite, like, talking point on this is how Trump keeps demanding that he take a drug, that Biden take a drug test to see what he's on. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have to be on something.
Oh, for sure.
If he's not...
For sure. He's going to be all hopped up like he was for the State of the Union.
Oh, that was unhinged.
Yeah, so I think that'll happen. The one thing Biden might try to do is when... If or when Trump gets convicted, which we're going to talk about the trial in a minute, he might try to pull the... Oh, it's well beneath the office of the president to debate with a felon. And I'm like, I don't think that's going to play well for him.
No.
Given everything that's occurred here and
no.
how the trial has seemed to have only helped Trump...
Like everything else they've thrown at him.
Right. His numbers have gone up. His fundraising crushed Biden last month. Good to see that they're finally getting their feet under them on the fundraising. And
yeah.
It seems that this RNC pivot has worked.
They made a ton of money out of Minnesota.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trump went there. Trump, if you have not watched Trump's riffs at the speech in Minnesota, they are funny. Some of the best. Like, they just prove again why Joe Biden is an idiot to agree to debate him.
Mm-hmm.
It was so good. His, like, his teleprompter fell off the stage, and then his, like, the lectern he was standing behind kept, like, tipping over when he would put his weight on it. So mm-hmm. it was, like, basically physical comedy playing out, but it's the former president.
Who... I have that clip. Let's play that clip.
But Americans are not struggling. You know, this is the worst platform. Who put this stage up here? This is the worst. The frickin' place is falling down. It keeps tilting further left. Like too many other things. What a crappy contractor this was.
Everything's shifting to the left. like a lot of things. This contractor is horrible.
Teleprompter just fell off the stage.
He's just funny. He's a funny guy. Like, let's bring entertainment back.
No, and I think, like, obviously it's unfair to him that he's had to be stuck in this courtroom during the trial in New York. But, like, people miss out on him just doing his speeches because they're just so... Like, he is unintentionally the funniest president we've ever had. Like, I remember thinking about George W. Bush a lot because, like, just, like, his little, like, smiles and waves and, like, the funny stuff he would do. And even when he's on the golf course.
We have to kill these terrorists. Now watch this drive.
Yes. Like, that kind of, like, unintentionally, like, cute and adorable funny. Donald Trump is just objectively hilarious without trying to be because of his personality and everything else. Like, the videos of him on the golf course with the music bumping from his Bluetooth speaker connected to his iPad.
Yeah.
Him sitting in the dining room at Mar-a-Lago playing, like, opera music
DJ
from his
Trump,
iPad.
Yeah.
It's just, it is... He is unintentionally the funniest person ever. The night that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, that whole thing, it's just like, Veep could not have written so many of these situations.
Yep.
But it's just him. His timing is great. He has a great sense of humor, which is clearly incredible given everything else that's happening.
I love when Shane Gillis talks about the night that Trump killed Baghdadi, the ISIS leader. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he died like a dog. I heard the cries. In Minnesota, by the way, it's very, you know, it's always kind of like the white whale of Republicans.
It's a weird.
Have not won that state in who knows however the fuck long. I mean, Tim Pawlenty was like the last major Republican.
He was the last statewide Republican. Yeah. And that was, 2010?
Yeah.
I think.
Sometime around
last.
Then.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's some polls there that show him contending, like within low single digits. You know, I still don't know that we'll necessarily win that, but, like, if he is contending in a state like that, that's a good sign for the national environment for us. New poll came out. We were just talking about it before recording. The generic ballot shows R plus
five,
which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these state polls, the battleground polls, which show Trump up pretty significantly. The national polls seem to have tightened a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, if Trump stays pretty even nationally, he's going to crush in the battlegrounds is essentially how that has translated in the past. You know, if you look at a place like Arizona where he's supposedly up 5, he has traditionally overperformed the Arizona polls by like 2 to 3 points. So even if you put, you know, some of that overestimating in there and maybe he overperforms a little bit, like you're still winning by a couple. The one race there that's fucked is the Senate race, the Kerry Lake nonsense going on.
Which
there.
Is crazy because Ruben Gallego should be the easiest Democrat to beat.
Yeah, well, Kristen Sinema really fucked us on that one. You know, I
was
hoping...
so good to us. She saved the filibuster in the Senate and then turned around and stabbed us.
Yeah, you know, that was a play for a corporate board membership. Someone was probably like, hey, if you drop out, we'll give you this nice, cushy, couple million dollar a year job.
Do you think we could try that? Would that work?
I
we try to run for
wish.
Something and just get somebody to pay us off to drop out?
I wish.
I can be bought.
Oh, everyone has a price, so let's be real here.
Our prices just went up, just so we're clear.
A little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah, enough for a private jet and to finish my pilot's license.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's a good deal.
Yeah. I don't ask
you know,
for
look
much.
Look at North Carolina, like Trump's dominating there.
Yeah.
Even in Georgia, Nevada,
there was,
like our prospects for Nevada are the best looking they perhaps have been since George W. Bush.
Should be good. And there was one poll today that now has Biden leading Trump in New York by single digits.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, if New York is a single-digit margin, like, that, again, translates to all the, like, the Georgias and the wherevers.
Yep.
That should be good. But also, I just don't trust anything anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing that worries me is we could Trump, like, let's say Trump is leading every battleground poll but for every week between now and Election Day. Democrats could still win because they vote like it's their job and they treat it like an Olympic sport.
Mm-hmm.
And they just... run circles around us, as we saw in the, I mean, depending on what you think about the vote totals, I mean, you saw Trump's go up, but how far up Democrats' votes went, like, it's insane.
Yeah, well, the good thing is that a lot of the COVID bullshit can't necessarily reoccur in some places. There's been some tightening of ballot harvesting stuff and stuff like that, but we have to utilize what is available to our advantage, especially when it comes to getting the low propensity voters to vote. I saw a poll the other day that was like, among people who sporadically vote, Trump is up something like 37 points. So if we can get those people to vote, whether it be through you know, mail-in, early voting, any of that stuff, you got to bank those votes. And it seems like there you have a pretty decent plan for that so far. I'd like to see a little bit more.
Yeah.
But that being said, the enthusiasm gap is also significant. So while the Democrats usually do turn out heavily, I do see a case where just the overall of Biden can really hurt them.
Especially with so many key voting groups that helped Biden win last time around are just not feeling the love anymore.
And I don't really consider North Carolina to be that much of a toss-up anymore, really. It still kind of is, but it's a little further out. Like, Florida's not a toss-up anymore. No. Ohio is not a toss-up anymore. You know, that really changed with Trump's first election. But you look at if he wins North Carolina, Georgia, Arizona, and Nevada across the Sun Belt, which he's running very strong in all those battlegrounds. You just have to pick off one in the north of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, which does, you know, obviously you have to break the air quote blue wall, but he's done it before. I think he could do it again. There's some interesting dynamics of, you know, Michigan, the Muslims, Pennsylvania, you know, the Philly black vote. There's been some interesting signs there that that's really cracking on Biden. Some of these black support numbers in these polls have been like previously unthought of. For Republicans, like in the 20s, which is crazy.
That is,
but like,
it's nuts.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen. And I think because there's so many cracks in the Biden base, I think there is actually a fair chance that Trump could win both the electoral and popular vote this time around.
Yeah.
Because again, like, will he actually win New York? I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree.
But
same thing with he's talking to like New Jersey.
Yes.
But New Jersey's much further out of reach than Minnesota. Yes. But like,
but just because he doesn't win the state and like the New York and New Jersey electoral votes, he's going to pick up, again, if he's actually, if Philly is really going, you know, 20% for him now, the black vote, I mean, that's. Those are the running up the total in states that you don't win that lets you win the popular vote, potentially.
And if you look at things like in Pennsylvania, the net Democrat edge on voter registrations has really turned by like 500,000, which I think is more than the margin in 2020, well more than the margin. So Hispanic is swinging hard for Trump. That's going to be key in Arizona and Nevada, especially those people down there are sick of this illegals shit at the border. So, you know, I mean, I wish the election was tomorrow. Obviously, we wish the election was tomorrow because of our jobs. But, like,
if we could get politically, this over with, that'd be...
politically, if the election were today, I think Trump would win in a landslide. I think it'd be well over 300 electoral votes and probably win the popular vote.
Probably.
You know? But we still have 5.5
Too
months.
Too long.
So it's kind of like we're just kind of in this waiting cycle. But a lot of stuff's going to happen here over the next few weeks. We have... the trial, right? The trial is going to come to the conclusion in New York.
Oh, boy.
What's your bet on that? Guilty?
I think there's a sleeper MAGA on that jury, and it's going to be a hung jury.
It could be. I had someone else tell me that they think it's going to be hung jury mistrial.
I think you're going to find there's either somebody – it's either – I mean, just, like, objectively, remove the fact that Donald Trump is the defendant and all the presidential politics of this. Like, it's a terrible case the prosecutors brought in general.
Was corrupt.
Like, like upcharging on something like this and then having your main witness be somebody who admits to lying on the stand, admits to stealing from the defendant on the stand.
Which is a worse crime.
Yes. All of these things, like, no jury would be like, yeah, I think we should take this guy down. But it's Donald Trump, so there's probably, because it's Manhattan, and even though jury selection was pretty, I mean, that was a messy process, but, like, you know that... where you're at matters. And so I think it's more likely than not that there's one person that, even if they're like, I think he's innocent, still wants to stick it to him and will say guilty. But I also think there are probably enough people that won't be convinced, or at least one that's just like, absolutely not, you're not using us to do this, who's going to say not guilty and not change. And so then you're just going to hang it up and mistrial, which is
could be. I mean, that's good enough. I don't know that they would have the balls to retry it, given everything that's happened here. They very well could, but I don't think they have the time either at this point.
Yeah.
Their legal strategy has essentially all but failed at this point. The big one that I think is outstanding is the immunity for the Jan 6 stuff, which the Supreme Court probably won't rule on until the last day of the term.
Ugh.
right before July 4th, which coincidentally will be right next to the debate.
Yeah,
that's going to be very interesting.
Oh, boy.
But the documents trial is, as of right now, dead in the water.
Yeah, indefinitely postponed.
Yeah, and some of this stuff that's coming out about, you know, the raid, the boxes of documents, the potential tampering of evidence, like, there's going to be so many intermediate hearings before they could even think about getting to a trial in that. That's just definitely not happening before the election.
I still don't think they've actually gotten all the clearances they needed for people working on the case.
Right, right.
Because it's all classified material, so you can't just have... to get...
And then you look at the Georgia trial. That's going nowhere right now because the Georgia Appeals Court just accepted the challenge again of the appeal on Fannie Willis's ability to prosecute the case. I mean, that's basically it.
Fannie Willis won her primary, and Nathan Wade was there to help her celebrate in, I'm sure, a very special way.
You know, and also, even if Trump does get convicted in New York, first off, it doesn't do anything to actually disqualify him from being president. The polling on that is pretty muddy on whether it would actually affect people's willingness to vote for him that are currently in his camp. Most Americans, by a wide margin, see it as bullshit charges, bullshit trial rigged against him, especially with the gag order. So I'm almost at the point where I think it's basically a win-win for Trump. If it's a mistrial, he declares victory. If he gets found not guilty, which I still think there's a percentage chance of that, then win-win. And if he gets convicted, he's going to use that to severely fundraise and probably campaign. Now, what the consequences will be, who knows? They going to try to throw him in jail? I don't really know. Maybe.
It's just crazy.
But, like, I don't... Like, the Secret Service is not going to allow that. Second,
like, where are you going to send him?
Right.
Like, you're putting him in Rikers?
That's why one of my buddies...
put him in Epstein's jail? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, one of my buddies from Twitter, you know, Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Thinks that they're going to rule him to house arrest in New York to keep him from campaigning. Which I was like, yeah, that's pretty reasonable. But also, that would be a huge PR victory for him.
Oh my gosh, yeah, they are literally imprisoning.
He literally could fucking live stream from Trump Tower.
Yeah, I was gonna say, just have everybody come to you and do a bunch of events, do virtual.
He'd get more eyeballs doing that than going out on the trail, and it would cost less.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, think back to right after he won in 2016 during the transition period. Mm-hmm. He just went down, he took the elevator down to the lobby and had press conferences there. He can do the exact same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. I think that we're going to get probably a verdict on that next Thursday or Friday. It seems like, as of right now, that's where the timing is going to line up.
What if the Supreme Court in a real bait and switch, because they are releasing opinions on Thursday? What
if next week? Are they doing a report this week?
This weekend, next week,
okay,
supposedly. Yeah. What if they drop their decision on immunity and then New York exonerates him in the same week?
Oh, my God.
Imagine.
He'd go up 3 or 4 points, I think, at that point. Yeah, we'll, of course, have full coverage of the conclusion of the trial and all that at townhall.com. Then you roll into June. You get the Supreme Court ruling. You get the debates, or the debate, the singular debate. then you have the 4th of July holiday, which burns up a week. And then you have the RNC. And Trump's going to announce his VP pick probably right before the RNC, which is what it seems to be lining up as of now.
Yep.
You have the RNC. You have all that. Then it's a couple weeks, and then it's the DNC.
Which is going to be a nightmare for Democrats, and it's going to be so much bad PR for them, and it's going to be delicious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to have basically borderline riots, if not full riots.
Yep.
You still have this background drum of, will they replace Biden, right? Which had gone away for a while and then seems to have returned because he seems to be getting worse and worse by the day. I mean, some of the shit that he's been doing lately is just insane.
We'll see how his first debate goes. I feel like that's going to be the tipping point. Moving the debates up allows them to be like, what do we think?
That was the theory I saw a couple people toss out, was maybe this is the trial run to see, like, if we could actually do this. Because if not, then, you know. But here's the other thing. That Dem convention is so late that it's basically almost Labor Day, right? If you're going to replace someone... First off, they're already running into ballot access issues in Ohio, which is very interesting.
And Democrats did it to themselves.
Yeah.
Also, no Democrat can say anything about, kicking a candidate off the ballot when a bunch of Democrats tried to kick Trump off the ballot.
Well, and sure, because the situation of what they tried to do was egregious compared to this. This Democrats is the law. The Democrats know the law.
Screwed themselves.
Yeah. And the Ohio State Legislature said, we're not changing the law. And the Ohio Secretary of State is like, you may want to consider nominating your candidate a little earlier because otherwise you're not going to be on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what consequences that have? I mean, obviously Trump would win the electoral votes by default, which is great. He's going to win Ohio anyway.
Uh-huh.
But there's a key Senate race there.
Yep.
So that's huge.
Democrat Sherrod Brown just had a FEC complaint filed against him today.
Yeah.
Ohio for allegedly
yeah,
soliciting donations over the max amount that is allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Did you see, by the way, your use of alleged made me think of the NBC News tweet last night.
Yes.
Where they said an alleged tornado tore through Greenville, Iowa.
NBC News will not be sued by a tornado or its family.
Or climate change. They got to keep that door open, too.
Alleged tornado.
But yeah, so really, you know, it's a long way away to the election, but before you know it, we'll be into past Labor Day into September. Supposedly, there's a second debate on September 10th. Although, if the first one goes disastrous, I could quickly see that one getting kiboshed. I'm assuming there will be a VP debate when that comes to fruition.
So.
I think, you know, so on that note, what are your thoughts on Trump VP?
Oh, boy. I think this is an election where it matters very little to voters, and I think it should matter. I think voters should care more about who his VP is, because obviously people know with Trump what they're getting already.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are going to vote for him, I think it's – if they're voting for or not for him, it's because of Donald Trump, not who he picks.
Mm-hmm.
But Republicans should be taking this more seriously, because whoever is his vice president is going to be set up and should, in theory, have no issue carrying us – through control of the White House for the next two terms after him, because obviously Trump is term limited after this one. So whoever he picks needs to be somebody, one, that conservatives can trust to govern as a conservative when they actually have all the power, not just, like, everybody knows the VP doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody that conservatives can trust to do the right thing, somebody who is going to not back down from any, you know, of the important battles that are going to need to be fought. Because, again,
Only Mike Pence had the courage.
There you go. There it is again. But, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the pushback... Think of 2016 through 2020 and everything that they threw at Trump that time. Obviously, they're going to do the exact same thing this time. This time around, Trump has nothing to lose, but his vice president will have a lot to lose because, again, they should be set up for a double term as president right after this. And so just making sure that that person is in it to fight and is willing to fight and is willing to continue doing what Trump started in 2016 and is going to restart again, hopefully, in 2025. Because all of this, like, as Trump learned the hard way in his first term, draining the swamp is not something you can just do easily.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we actually want to make substantive change to the administrative state and get rid of these bureaucrats and actually reduce the size of government, maybe if we're lucky, actually finally get rid of the Department of Education or the Department of Energy or something like that. It has to be somebody who's going to be able to help Trump do that for another 4 years, but then we'll actually follow through on it for the next eight, because I think about, like, look at what happened from Reagan to H.W. Bush. You know, we have great leadership under Reagan, we win the Cold War, we're this, like, the world's lone superpower, and then because H.W. Bush said, I'm not going to raise taxes, and then probably raised taxes, we ended up with Bill Clinton, who, again, was not as bad as Obama, not as bad as Biden, but still, that was an opportunity that we should have had to have four terms consecutively of Republicans in the White House, and we messed it up, and so we want to have somebody that's not going to do that again.
Yeah, so it's been interesting to see how this whole race is playing out. It seems like there's a few top people that are kind of getting jockeyed around here.
Basically everybody that's going to the Trump trial seems like they're auditioning.
Yes. Yep. If I had to put my money on who I think he's going to pick right now, I think it's going to be Doug Burgum.
Dougie.
And I'll tell you why. I think he likes the fact that he is a businessman.
Yeah.
He likes the fact that he's rich. He's a current governor, so that carries a little bit with it, you know. He's not controversial. He's not going to take the spotlight away from Trump. And I think he trusts him that if something were to happen, he will govern well.
Yeah.
Now, a few interesting things. I've always thought that Doug Burgum was pretty solid, right? A couple of listeners actually emailed in and said, his record's eh. You know, I've looked. There's a few things. I think a lot of it has to do with, like, the conservation stuff out west and all that stuff. If there's other things, please email me. I'd be glad to know. Triggered@townhall.com. Love hearing from you all. But I think that's going to be the pick, and I think I'd be happy with that. It's not a problem. You know, you saw a couple, maybe a week ago, the reemergence of, oh, is Nikki Haley going to be VP, which was quickly shot down by the Trump camp. Yep. But, like, that would be an example of something that would really fucking piss me off, and it would piss off a lot of his conservative base. Now, would they not vote for him? Of course not. Like, that's not how we're going to operate here. But, like, he's not going to do something that could be potentially problematic for him when he's up, right? You don't need to shake up the race like a Sarah Palin kind of shit. You don't need to make headlines. You just need a solid conservative by your side who's going to support you and help you execute your mission once you get to Washington and could potentially carry it on.
Yeah.
Burgum's not super old. He's a little oldish, right? He's not a young gun.
But I think he's like half the age of Joe Biden probably.
He's like 66.
So half the age of Joe Biden.
So theoretically he'd be 70 when running for his first term.
A child.
So he would still be younger than Joe Biden if he were to complete an additional 8 years being president afterwards.
That's so insane.
Yeah.
Who was I talking about that with? And they were talking about people they want to see run for president or maybe be VP. And they were like, I'd love to see Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And I was like, no, she's doing incredible work in Arkansas. We need her there. She has her entire lifetime to live over again from now, and she still would be younger than Joe Biden is currently. So I'm like, she can do everything she's done in her life, which has already been quite a bit. Mm-hmm. She has that much time again before she's like at presidential age, according to Joe Biden.
Yep.
But there was a Harris... Harvard Caps Harris poll that came out about the VP options and whether it would make somebody more likely, less likely, or have no effect. And in that poll, Tim Scott was the biggest shift. 25% of people they surveyed said they would be more likely to vote for Donald Trump if Tim Scott was his running mate. 19% said they would be less likely, and 55% said that it would have no effect on them. Notably, though, Tim Scott leads among the Democrats that they surveyed. 23% of Democrats said that if Trump picked Tim Scott, they would be more likely to vote for him, which is surprising, and I don't believe that Democrats are going to suddenly. But again, are they actually Democrats, or are they like Minnesota Democrats? Like these, like the working Democrats are so different from these woke leftist Democrats that 100%. Have never worked hard in their life and don't have a clue what's going on, and you're never going to convince them. Interestingly, as we're doing this podcast, Nikki Haley just had her first public appearance since she suspended her campaign and said she is voting for Trump. So
there's a shock.
She's still trying to be VP, maybe.
Yeah. That would, oh man, I can't stand her. That'd be terrible.
But it's another Trump vote.
Well, sure. Yeah.
South Carolina.
In the basket. You know, Tim Scott, like, it wouldn't disgust me as much as a Nikki Haley VP pick would, but, like, I would certainly much rather basically anyone else on the list besides Tim Scott. For the reason that I don't think he's that solid. I think he's a little too squishy for me. And he tried to pass, like, that policing bullshit bill back. He got caught up in the George Floyd moment. I don't think they need to go, you know, air quote, token diversity on this. Like, if his black numbers are what they are. And also, one thing that was interesting in that poll, I think they specifically looked at black voters and whether Trump picking a black VP would increase their percentage at all. And it didn't move it all that much. I think the increase in the black vote is because they like Trump.
Yeah.
And you know, they realize what has happened to the country in between. They, you know, the illegal stuff pisses them off. With all these illegal immigrants coming in all over the country, fucking destroying cities. And also, you have the economic. I mean, the economic argument is the end-all be-all of this entire campaign.
Yes.
Which we are winning right now, that argument.
The Biden administration has completely failed at economic messaging, even though they had Build Back Better in the campaign, and then
Bidenomics. Yeah,
that failed. Then they stopped saying that because it wasn't working either.
Well, it's because it was tying a shit economy to his name.
And
then you even still have liberal writers who are, what are the American people just not getting about how great this economy is? I'm like, well, you're just fucking retarded. Like, look at people and how they're having to struggle to survive. Like, we don't have kids or a family. We're having issues.
Yeah.
Like, I was just saying to my buddy.
Real wages are down. Average price of anything is now 20% higher than it was in January 2021. You, like.
Yeah. I was just talking to my buddy. I'm like, how are people with families affording this shit?
I have no idea. I have no idea. It's insane. And that's, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. When you're, if you are a single mom or a single dad or a dual income family even, and you have two kids and a dog and a mortgage. I mean, interest rates are the highest they've been since early 2001. If you got screwed over on an adjustable rate mortgage, you're totally screwed. Even if you bought a house recently, you're still screwed.
Yep.
The cost of goods is 20% higher. Your real wages are down so much. the average household net worth under Biden, adjusted for inflation, has gone up 0.7% compared to double-digit increases under Trump through his first 3 years. Like, there's just, there's no, nobody can honestly say, unless you're one of the doctors who got six figures of student loan debt erased, even though you're making six figures, unless you are one of those people, nobody can say that they're better off now than they were 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. There's just no way. Nobody is better off.
Well, and I saw a stat this morning that was really astounding. Compared to 2019, you have to make 80% more now to be able to afford to purchase a home.
Oh, no.
That's crazy.
There's your problem.
We know that. Yeah. We fucking know that. I know that's especially right. in this area. Yeah. Especially in this area. It's just insane.
80% more?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I gotta go get three more jobs then.
I know.
What?
I'm
never gonna own a home. It's fine.
Well, yeah. That's
tiny homes, I think, are gonna be the. I think I one of those shipping containers that is on the boat that crashed the bridge. Or like in Baltimore, the sheds. I just
the sheds that they sell. That's why I'm gonna fuck off out of here to Florida soon enough.
The problem is I couldn't even like the cost to buy an empty lot that's absolutely like trashed around here is still like.
Well, the land, yeah.
Like, you can't afford that either. So even if I could afford a shipping container to put on a piece of land, I can't afford the land that it would go on.
Yep. Yep.
How about houseboats?
Like Joe Manchin? It's like a house yacht, but...
Yeah. Should look into that.
All right. Well, that's... I think we hit everything, right? We're good for today.
If we want any more bad news, a Michigan farm worker was just diagnosed with bird flu.
Oh, fuck.
So he's the second U.S. case tied to dairy cows, which I'm confused how the bird flu has to... Cows? Involved with cows.
I thought that was like mad cow disease.
Cows aren't birds. I mean, birds aren't real, but cows are definitely not birds because cows are real.
Mad cow. So we're going from birds to cows now?
I don't know. Or cows to people.
Yeah, well. But the real key, people to people. Because there's definitely been
like, isn't it like animal 50% to human. Mortality?
Well, so yeah. There's been animal to human cases, but there's as many human to human. That right. would make COVID look like a walk in the park. With like actual death rates. I can't live
through one of these again.
Yeah, no, I'm good on that.
I had swine flu. Does that protect me? I know swine. We mentioned birds and cows. Yeah, I had the swine flu. So swine flu. Does that give me any immunity to the bird flu?
No, yeah, it's close enough.
Still don't think I ever got COVID. I don't know how.
Yeah, I had it once and it was fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap up with the Biden gaffe of the day, and this one was a particularly disgraceful one.
Oh yeah.
On Monday, he was at an event celebrating Jewish American heritage. How ironic, right?
Yeah.
He made a very disgraceful mistake out there. Take a listen.
My administration is working around the clock to free the remaining hostages, just as we have freed hostages already. And here with us today is Hirsch Goldberg Poland, and still he is not here with us, but he's still being held by Hamas.
He claimed that an American Israeli citizen being held captive by Hamas, Hirsch Goldberg Poland. Right?
Yep.
Was present at the White House.
Yep.
There's just one problem. He is not. And probably, you know, God forbid, is dead.
Yeah.
Like, Joe Biden left these Americans to die.
He sent U.S. troops to build a pier that hasn't been able to get anything to the people it's supposed to go to. But he can't send in... Like, we are the United States. If we can't go in and get our hostages from a bunch of Stone Age barbarians...
Yep. I know.
Like, I don't... What would be the harm?
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting. So, I think there's a lot of things around the world that... I think you see a lot of things. Like, Bibi's kind of just waiting for Trump to come back.
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of like, I wonder if we could just kind of elongate this a bit and then just really just finish the job.
Yeah.
Easier. Obviously, 5 months is a long time, but,
yeah,
you know, it's already been eight.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, that's, geez.
All right, well, we're going to wrap up for today. Of course, all the coverage and more from Spencer Brown at townhall.com. And you know the deal. If you enjoy Triggered and want it uncensored, become a Town Hall VIP member at townhallvip.com. Use the promo code TRIGGERED to get 50% off. Get into this exclusive Club of Patriots. You will not only be directly funding what we're doing here on Triggered and get access to Triggered Uncensored, but you will get a ton of VIP members-only content from Spencer, Katie, Kurt, Matt. The list goes on and on. If you become VIP Gold, you get it on all the sites in our entire Town Hall Media family. Across the board, you got Cruiser, Vodka Pundit, I mean, Jen Van Laar. The list goes on and on. I promise you, you will love it. Money back guarantee. No one has ever asked for their money back from a Triggered listener who became a VIP member. So we could really use your support this election year to fund our real journalism, not the bullshit that the leftist media wants you to see. Again, that's townhallvip.com. Use the promo code Triggered for 50% off. Thank you to all of you who are VIP members, and there are so many of you that are Triggered listeners as well. It means the world to us. We love all of you. Thank you, and I hope you have a good Memorial Day weekend. Of course, take some time to remember that it is not – I don't have to tell Triggered listeners this, more so the liberals, but
it's – On the off chance the liberals are listening.
Yeah, well, we have a couple spies. There's like a couple NPR people. Remember when they
that was great.
Called us the us and Larry Elder because the black face of white supremacy?
Yeah.
Because we were backing Larry Elder, and that was a good one.
Yeah.
This weekend is to remember the troops who gave the ultimate sacrifice for us to be able to have our barbecues and go to the beach and enjoy this nice long weekend. So, you know, take a moment to remember them, say a prayer, and, you know, God bless America. So we will be back here next Wednesday, May 29th, for another episode of Triggered.